Okay, well, we're recording. We'll get ready to get started. So I'd like to welcome everybody to the call. And this is the first of hopefully many. As we get this ready to get going, I'd like to do one a month of a regular NFNLP call with whatever subjects the people ask for, we'll put together. And then we'll do at least every few weeks, if not once a month, a specialty call. Like Tuesday night, we had Burke Allen from Allen Media Strategies come on, talk about how to get radio interviews and things like that, which will be able to be, those of you that didn't listen to it on Tuesday, it'll be on the podcast probably early next week. We're working on getting that uploaded. And you can just go to the website, and it'll take you there, and so you can listen to that with a couple of other things, a couple of the radio interviews that I did. So we'll also have, like I said, the specialty calls as well as these calls for people that ask. I know we're going to probably do one on addictions, one on sports, one on how to tie in hypnosis and NLP a little bit more, things like that. So if you have questions or you have an idea for a conference call or if there's somebody you'd like to see interviewed, we'll see if we can get them on and interview them. So now that we get ready to get started, I thought I'd go over, you know, I've been doing this quite a while, so I thought I'd go over some of the questions I'm usually asked. I've been writing these down for a while. The questions I've been asked a lot about building your practice and just practice building in general and just some general questions. So let's get ready to get started. And those of you got the email know the 10 questions I'll go over, and plus I'll take other questions. So first one is, you know, I have a reputation of being successful in this little hypno-NLP world. And what does success mean to me? Well, when I got started in the field, I just wanted to make a living at it. And it's ebb and flowed as I've grown in the field and as the field has changed. I was lucky. The very first exposure I had to a hypnosis clinic, if you will, there was a clinic in where I lived in Indiana, Maryville, Indiana, called South Lake Hypnosis, ran by a guy named Russell Yarnell. And it was a very busy clinic. It was one of those super clinics that people talk about, like Positive Changes, and some of the other people do those kind of practice building. It was based on his system, which he got from someone else. And it was about programs and very busy with full-page ads and things like that. So the first clinic I was exposed to had about 100 clients a week with about two or three hypnotists working there. So they always say it's your first exposure to the world will be the most impactful. You know, it's your imprint. So I always thought, yeah, you can make a living at this. And so I followed that model and a couple of the other models. So what success to me means, doing what I want to do, the hypnosis and the NLP, and making a living at it. And I can pretty much say that, you know, for the last 20 years, all of my income has been derived in one way or another from the NLP and the hypnosis that I've done. I've had a couple other positions, but it was sort of related to this, a couple of government positions, and I was doing some psych testing because I went back and got my psych degree and got my psychologist license. So, but other than that, it's that. So what success means to me is doing what I set out to do and earning a living at it. Because to me, what a professional means is this is what I do for a living. It's not a hobby. It's what I do for a living. And that's basically what it means to me. And realizing that there's going to be some ebb and flows, because this is like every other part of the economy and the country, as things change. You know, my idea of success changes. I've traveled all over the world and trained in this and done training. So it's been a wonderful ride, and I feel humbled that I've been able to do that. And so I guess that would lead into the next question on what advice would I give a young or new NLPer and hypnotist on becoming successful? Well, in this market, with the current economy and everything that's happening and what I've seen over the years, I would say that, of course, get your skill set built up. Really learn how to do hypnosis so you're very comfortable. As I've heard it said that, you know, you're a hypnotist when you're not afraid to hypnotize anyone, anytime, any place, given the realities of what hypnosis are, especially those in NFNLP that have been trained in NLP know that we can do NLP anytime, any place, with anyone. Doesn't matter. As long as they want to do something, we can do it. And so I'd say get very good at your skills. Practice them everywhere you can. I know one of the things I do a little different is I tell people that when they're first learning these skills, you know, a lot of hypnotists and NLP trainers say go practice with friends and families. I always say, those should be the last people you go and practice with. I'd say go find some people to work your skills with. One of the great places you can practice your skill sets is in some of the non-for-profits that use volunteers, with one of the mains being the Salvation Army. And, you know, they deal with alcohol, drugs, people getting out of prison, family issues. I mean, you could do a whole bunch of really good work, and they're usually very open to people volunteering and helping. And so you can practice with real-life kind of clients. Or if you could find a hypnotist that has a practice that would let you internship or, you know, do some slave labor, as we used to call it, so you can get some practice that way. I know when I was training people, I'd have them come into my clinic, when I had my clinic going, and I would have them, you know, work with some clients. And it really built their confidence because, you know, the first person you hit techniques are fascinated, think it's great, and it works. It builds your confidence so you can do it anywhere. You know, if you do it with a family member and they giggle in the middle of a relaxation or an induction, it'll kind of destroy your confidence. So I'd say get very good at your skill set. The next thing I'd say to become successful is pick a niche, something that you're personally passionate about. What brought you into the field? Some of us came in to the field for weight loss. Some of it, you know, because maybe we were a weight loss client or we stopped smoking or improved our game. I came in basically through addictions, as most people know, and also with using it for pain control in sports. So I'd say pick a niche and focus on your niche. There used to be a little book you could buy called Niche Your Way Rich, about pick a niche and really focus on it. Because if you're a generalist, if you're an expert at everything, it means you're good at nothing. I've done a broad spectrum of the NLP and the hypnosis and change work. But if you ask me, I'd say, well, my number one specialty would be addiction, followed by sport, or high-performance mental training. Yeah, that would be my two main ones. And then everything else would spill off from that, the weight loss, the smoking, and things like that. But if you pick a niche and you get really good at it, you can begin to speak on that at conferences. You can begin to, like, write papers on it. And you can kind of carve out your little world. And that ties in with the next question, was to move your success forward, what would it be? And that would be get that niche and really focus on it, read about it, become an expert in that one application of NLP and hypnosis. This is still basically an untapped field when you really look at it. I mean, and now with the wonderful Internet, you can get all the research right online, and you can begin to look at some of the psychological research, even though, you know, if you're not a licensed professional, we may not be able to do that kind of research, but you can read that research. So maybe one of the things you could do is become comfortable with reading psychological research and how it's laid out, because there's an awful lot of empirical evidence that this stuff works, and it's growing all the time. So let's say you wanted to become an expert in sport. You could go and read the books on sports and sports psychology, sports performance, high-performance mental training, things like that, and become an expert at it, start writing articles for the journal, and, you know, of course, we have NFNLP, our newsletter, love to have articles, things like that, so you can begin to move forward. Because the other thing you want to do, which would help, which would tie into the next question, to get you on a road of long-term success, is you not only want to build your practice, and you not only want to build your, you know, your clientele in your clinics, you want to begin to become known as an expert across the board. And by carving out your niche, writing some articles, speaking on it at some of the conferences, and the conferences are always looking for speakers, it can get you known, and then you can make some products, and you can begin to sell them, not just to your clients, but to other people that want to get trained. This is a growing field, and so you can train other people. I was in the right place the right time and kind of pursued it, and because I was into the NLP and the hypnosis when I went to my first NGH conference back in 1989, and there was only a couple people talking about NLP. So I kind of carved out my niche in the hypnosis world as the NLP guy, that works well with all the hypnosis organizations, because I kind of saw there was a lot of clash between NLPers and the hypnosis world, and I couldn't understand that. So I kind of carved out my niche, and I used the NLP skills to do that. I mean, I was at one point, I did basic NLP training at the National Guild of Hypnotists, the International Association of Counselors and Therapists, the International Medical and Dental Hypnotherapy Association, the Midwest Hypnosis thing, and the one in NAT, National Association of Transpersonal Hypnotists. All within about a year of each other, I was doing all these trainings all over with all these different organizations, and usually people only work with one. But I was using our NLP skills of mirroring, matching, rapport, and just helping each organization build by my niche, which was training hypnotists in NLP and putting their hypnosis in an NLP kind of toolbox, which became quite popular, and well, everybody on this call kind of probably came through that and helped me. And so now, and then I got known also as the NLP sports and the addiction specialist, because that's what I've been doing for many, many years. So that would be my advice to get started on the road to long-term success, because you not only want to think of just what's going on now, you want to begin to plan for the future. And as we see with the economy going up, I've had specialty clinics, and they change, and it will ebb and flow with the economy. So the next question, number five on our list, was, were there some hypnotists that I looked up to and learned from, a mentor? Well, probably the first and foremost would have been Ormond McGill. I was lucky enough to get to meet him a long time ago and talk to him and watch him work. You know, he was, I don't know if he was formally trained in NLP, but he had the language patterns that he would do, and it was fascinating to watch him and pick his brain on, you know, 50, 60 years in the field as a professional. And then there's all kinds of other hypnotists that I've learned from through the years. I did a training at Jerry Kine School, and he was the one that showed me how to begin to put together a home study course format. And when I first did the first one, no one else was doing it. And so I learned a lot from him. I also have some business mentors that I work with, Elsom Eldridge from the National Guild, things like that. So I think whatever you're going to be good at, is you need a mentor in that field, a personal coach. You know, for my working out, I've been using Frank Zane. I've talked to him on the phone and got his stuff, and I plan on going out and training with him again, or training with him at his little gym, because everyone needs a personal coach. Everyone needs a success coach. And, you know, it's always ironic to me that people want to become coaches, hypno coach or an NLP coach, and you talk to them, they don't have any coaches themselves. So I think you need to find some people that you can learn from and talk to. And what's fascinating, if you go to some of the conferences, most of them be more than happy to sit and talk to you. At one of the conferences or one of these trainings. You know, tomorrow I leave for Las Vegas to do the solid NGH Solid Gold, and I've done it before. And I'll sit and talk to, you know, if somebody has questions, I'll happily share this information. So everyone should get a mentor. Mine, it's been like, it's changed through the years. There's been people I've really admired. Of course, Richard Bandler was fascinating to watch as a trainer in the NLP world. Of course, Tony Robbins is a public speaker. And like I said, Jerry Kine for building a hypnosis business. And, of course, Ormond McGill for his, elegance as a long-term hypnotist. And he's a guy, I think the last thing I'd say about him that I taught is that, and I'm going to try to model this because I've kind of gotten off my path, as they say, which is never hear anybody talk bad about Ormond McGill. He could work with everybody. And so that's one of the things I want to begin to model. It says, question six is, what are the pitfalls I would counsel aspiring NLPers and hypnotists to look out for and avoid? Well, number one is watch the ego. Keep your ego in check, you know. In my personal growth program, they say ego stands for easing God out. You become a hypno-god, as I call them, or an NLP-god. You know, it's never, it's well, it was surprising the first few times I'll see somebody at a conference or they'll be at a training and the very first one, and you run into them 2 years later, they're the absolute unmitigated expert in the field, and in fact they're correcting all the people that have been doing it for 20 or 30 years. So I would say watch your ego, because one of the things, one of the bad side effects of NLP is it becomes very easy to change your own submodalities and belief systems, so you start believing that. So you need to watch out for that. And one way to do that is to have a mentor, somebody who you will take their counsel and listen to, and let them keep your ego in check. You know, I'm always learning things. My students are always teaching me things. I came into the field with a little bit different attitude because of the substance abuse background, both as a recovering alcoholic myself and as a counselor. I always saw that the people that get the big egos are the ones that have the hardest falls, and I never wanted to do that. So you want to keep yourself green and growing, and watch out for that tendency to become a hypno-god and believing your own press, always remembering that we write our own press, but if you begin to believe it, you know, it can be a very tough thing. Where do I see the hypnosis industry in 10 years? Well, I think we're at a junction point, to be honest with you, the hypnosis and the NLP world. I think we're at the same point where in the early 1980s, and even going back a little farther, going back to chiropractic in the 70s, there's been a lot of talk that we need to carve out our own niche, you know, to become a separate and distinct profession. I believe that. And I think to do that, we need to look at those two models. Chiropractors in the 1970s, at first they were trying to play with the medical doctors. They were trying to get on board, and basically they were being sabotaged, shot at, and destroyed at every corner. They basically went their own way, just pretty much didn't care what the AMA and the medical community said. They developed their own protocols, their own schools, their own curriculums, and they built their own field. But they almost had to break from trying to be under the thumb of the medical community. And that was great. Now we look at it, chiropractors. I mean, there's chiropractors in the VA system. There's chiropractors on staff at the hospitals or in some states. They are considered primary care physicians here. They're their own unique separate profession. Now, alcohol and drug counselors, on the other hand, in the early 1980s, it was a fun field to be in. They were pretty autonomous. And if you did work in a facility, you made really good money and had a lot of freedom to do things. They went the other route, and now got licensure and certification from the states, but kind of subjugated themselves to the psychological community and the social work community. And now the average alcohol and drug counselor will probably make $10 to $12 an hour, be under the auspices of someone else, and have to spend hundreds of dollars a year to keep their CEUs up and work very hard at it. So I think the message I see is we're at that junction point. We can either carve out our own unique field, or we can go under the auspices of the medical psychological community. So in 10 years, we'll either be our own profession, our own succinct, you know, profession that's respected and admired and doing the things they want to do, or we'll become basically a subset of working under social workers and psychologists, you know, where they charge $100 an hour for a client, you do the hypnosis and make maybe $15-$20. It's up to us on whether we want to go. I personally would rather, even though I'm a psychologist, I'll tell you, I'd personally rather be a distinct profession and do it that way. So that's my thing. So I counsel people that we want to stay away from licensure and certification in the States for as long as possible, because all we have to do is look at Indiana to see how it can go awry and bad things can happen. So that's where I see the hypnosis industry in 10 years. Where I'd like to see it again is we keep carving out our own niche, doing what we're supposed to do. You know, I do agree with the organizations when they say, you know, if you're going to do medical, make sure you get referrals or at least get very good release slips signed. you know, so you can do the kind of work that you want to do. And so that's where I see it growing. That's what I want it to do. And question number 9, if there were some special secret to success that I could share, what would it be? Well, the secret to success, you know, I've been talking a lot about the secret and how you think, and I agree with that. But in my opinion, the secret of success is consistency. Keep moving forward. Keep trying. Many of us, you know, they go to a conference for the first time and they see somebody making a lot of money or talking about it, things like that, and they're going to compare themselves to it, not seeing that the work that they did for, you know, 10 or 15 years to build it. Most of the people I see with the long-term practices, you know, they didn't build it overnight. It took years. It took practice. So I would say consistency and keep moving toward your goal, realizing that what you want, you know, it's a process. You're not going to get there overnight, and it may take a little effort. But consistency and being willing to work through the dark times. You know, I've had practices slow down, and that's when I had to go and do some other things to augment my income. That's one of the reasons I went back and got my doctorate and my psychology stuff, was to give myself some other things. And so I would say keep moving toward your goal and be consistent. You know, every day try to do a little something toward your goal of becoming a hypnotist, full-time professional, you know, networking, doing the things you need to do. And those of you, of course, listening on this call or the recording know that you're already there. You're doing things most people don't do, which is continue to learn and grow. And realize, going back to one of the other questions, the moment you think you know it all, you're already behind everybody else. So, and what's the most last question, that, and then I'll open it up for questions, which is, what's the most important thing in being a successful NLPer and hypnotist? I would say it's two things. Number one is confidence that you can help people, you know, and you build that confidence by helping people, and it builds and grows. And know that I don't take responsibility for your successes. So I don't have to take the responsibilities for people's failures if they choose not to follow through on the changes that we're working on. I'm just a person giving information, showing them how things work in their heads and things like that. And so what I want to do is just help them on their path. So I'd say it's confidence and open-mindedness to try something else. You know, if someone comes in, I try this. If it doesn't work, I'll try something else. I never act like any one of the techniques or any of the modalities is the end-all and be-all. And I'm always nervous when I run to people and they say, you know, it's this technique is the end-all and be-all, or this, or, you know, whether that's, you know, EFT or Reiki or regression or whatever it happens to be, if you believe the one thing is the self. I'll do whatever works. So the most important thing to being successful is having confidence and being willing to try something else if what you're doing doesn't seem to be working, and moving toward your goal and realizing that you learn from every experience. You know, I've done a few phone radio interviews in the last few months, and most of them went well, but I can tell you the ones that didn't go so well, I learned a lot. You know, I learned I didn't do my homework. I wasn't prepared going in, and a couple of things kind of blindsided me that, so the next time I went on the radio, I was prepared for it. So, you know, that's what I would say is the most important thing to success. So that's my basic little overview. And now I'm going to open it up for questions. If you have any questions, you can unmute your phone by *3, and then you can ask a question. So, do we have any questions? No questions. Hold on one second. Okay. So, I don't want to end too early, so let me ask I just went blank. From Pennsylvania. Do you have any, think of a question you can ask on how I can help you build your business or do what you need to do.
Okay, I just have a question. I was taking your weight loss program.
Yes, ma'am.
Workshop, yes. And when you do your sessions with people, do you? I know you talk about how you think about food, but do you ever go into nutrition or say, like, you should eat 3 cups of vegetables and have 2 fruits a day or anything of that nature, or do you just talk about people's attitude and beliefs about food?
That's a great question. And, you know, and what I'm going to say next is counterintuitive for what we all do, I think, you know. And like you said, you got the weight loss program, and I mostly focus on the attitude and the thought processes about the food,
mm-hmm.
not the food itself. Now, from talking
right.
to people that have had those big super practices and in that Scott McFall and some of those guys that do trainings like that, the thing
mm-hmm.
I think that they all kind of agree on, or at least used to, I've talked to them lately, is the more you talk about nutrition, the less success you have with clients.
Okay.
Because there is so much information out there about food, literally A to Z, Atkins to the zone, you know,
mm-hmm.
and none of it agrees with each other, other than drink
mm-hmm.
more water and exercise, things like that. But, I mean, the food is, like, all over the board. And so what I found,
right.
the more I tried to go into eating or the food itself, you know, there would always be a percentage of the clients that would come back the next week and go, yeah, but I read this book or this expert
mm-hmm.
says this, you know. And so, and I was focusing on how they think about food because, again, if you look at naturally thin people, when you're focusing on naturally thin people, they don't think much about food. They don't
mm-hmm.
get up in the morning, think about what they're going to have for dinner. Not that they don't enjoy eating. Of course, that's kind of the secret in how we think. What you think about happens. So I'm trying to get their attitude shifted about food and, you know, just eat healthy, eat less, and things like that. And the other thing I think that can happen is if you find something that works for you in your
mm-hmm.
own personal life to drop weight, I think you can fall in love with it, which is great, except then you try to push that off on other people and it may not work. You know,
okay.
When I'm trying to drop weight, when I'm trying to go to a competition or something, for karate, try to make a weight class, which I should do that, come to think of it. I like the high-protein, low-carb diet.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, but it's not for everybody. You know, especially I go to parts of the world where, you know, half the people are vegetarian. It's real tough to follow the Atkins program if you don't eat meat.
Right.
There's only so many tofu cows you can choke down. So... You know, so yeah, I focus on the on eating less, moving more, and their attitude about food. But that's a great question. And
well, that really actually makes sense to me because, like you said, people have different methods of losing weight, and they've been successful at one thing or the other. And so, if you're in a room with 10 people, and you know say this is the way you should do it, well, it may not ring true to those people. So just talking about the, you know, the attitude and makes more sense.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Great question. Who else has a question? How about Canada? Eh? No other questions?
Hi there.
Hi.
This is Janice from Vancouver.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? I was interested in some of your work that you've done with addiction.
Okay.
And one of the concerns I guess I have in working with people who are on substances or still using is the whole physiologic withdrawal as you start using hypnosis perhaps to alter their behavior around their addiction. Are there special considerations or concerns that you need to have about that, or are there particular things in your suggestions that you can do to alleviate what you might typically experience if someone was trying to withdraw from substances without using hypnosis?
Right. Well, I know that the traditional thinking on addictions is you really can't work on the underlying issues until the person dries out a little bit and for alcohol or becomes clean and sober, whatever words you want to use. they kind of have to get the toxins out of their body for them to begin to work at the underlying issue. This is why I think insight therapy was a failure for addictions most of the time, because if the person, you know, never got clean and sober, and they did insight therapy, they might get some insight, and then they had great insight as they were using. So you know, they have to get, well, I think the NLP and the hypnosis techniques that we have can help people abstain long enough to begin to work on the issues. You know, go ahead.
I was going to say, are you suggesting then that you use some techniques at first to allow them to cut back on the use?
I'm pretty much a traditionalist when it comes to that. They have to go off everything to really get this to work. You know, it's kind of like dipping your toe in the water, because again, alcohol and drugs, they actually change your neurochemical structure and all of that. So you want to watch that. A great book for people to read, and this isn't even one I wrote, so I'm going to recommend it. It's called The Craving Brain. The Craving Brain. Email me, and I'll get you the author's title. I don't have it in front of me. But there's been a lot of research that talks about the actual neurochemical structure of addiction and why, you know, certain things work, and even why things like Alcoholics Anonymous, psychotherapy, relaxation works for addicts as you're in training their brain to relieve the stress, which upsets the dopamine serotonin levels, which causes craving, you know. And this guy even points out that there's it's not a vitamin, it's a supplement called 5-HTP, which you can buy at a health food store dirt cheap, that actually has better efficacy than most of the traditional drugs that they prescribe to alcoholics to try to treat craving, because it helps stabilize the brain chemicals. So, and then what we can do with the hypnosis and the NLP is begin to train them to use relaxation. It's kind of like the old relaxation response from Dr. Benson in the 70s, and it gets them kind of so they can stabilize their own brain chemistry. And again, that's what even going to an AA meeting does, is it gives you that hour of kind of a quiet time where they can relax. So what I would suggest, and the other thing I'd say is I'm still a traditionalist. If somebody calls me up and they say they're drinking too much, they want to quit drinking, I ask them to go to several AA meetings, two a week, while they're coming to see me. Okay? And that's because, you know, in NLP we talk about modeling, and they're going to have to model people that don't drink. Well, if they're still hanging out at the bar and hanging out with people that drink and party, they have no models of people that aren't drinking or drugging or, you know, living a clean and sober lifestyle. And so if AA, even if you don't agree with a lot of its premises, but it's kind of misunderstood, it's a great place to go and see people that have overcome difficulties and not drank, not drugged, not went back out there. So I would have people do that. Then I use the NLP and the hypnosis to augment it.
Oh, 2 weeks of AA. Okay, great.
Two meetings a week while they're seeing me.
Yeah.
And then hopefully they keep going when I'm done.
Yeah, I guess the concern is that for certain things like really severe alcoholics, they do go through physiologic withdrawal that is can be quite dramatic physiologically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they have to do that under the care often of a doctor.
They should go get a screening, especially if they're. You just brought up a great point. Thanks for bringing it up. Alcohol. We talk about all these drugs, and everybody say how bad drugs are. More people die from alcohol withdrawal than all the other drugs put together. And so, especially if they're drinking and drinking and using other substances, they should get screened by a doctor so they can, at least you've had that covered, because they can go into, depending on how long they've been drinking and things, they can go into seizures quite easy.
Yeah. So you successfully, through hypnosis, inhibited their desire to drink, but then they go home and start having DTs and seizures. So.
Yeah. And DTs are no fun. So, thanks. Great question.
control.
Does anybody else have any questions?
Yes, I sure do. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, who's this?
This is Michael in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Just fine. You had recommended building a skill set. Were there any books that you found particularly helpful when you were doing that?
Well, I would try to read like different books on the subject that I want to become an expert in, or not even an expert, just better at, you know. Like I just mentioned, there's the Craving Brain, which gives you a great overview of addiction from a different viewpoint. The other thing is try to read some of the outside information, not just like the Journal of Hypnotism or IAC magazine or IMDHA, whatever group you're involved in, and even read, there's a really cool book called Scientific American Mind, and it's got some really cool little articles in it, you know, that gives you a different viewpoint, and it kind of goes over some research. So what I found, I'll be reading it, there might be a really cool article in there that talks about some research somebody did. And of course, you can go to the web, look it up, and you can find that. And a client, someone else had read it and told me about it, and I read it in the book, and I went, wow, and I went and got it. And it kind of changed my thinking on treating addictions, or at least it opened me up to, I never thought of it that way. In fact, I'm going to redo my addiction program eventually and bring that new information in it. So I'd say, you know, be open to read all kinds of things and you know, carve out your own niche that way. Because you're going to bring your
anything in particular on pain management?
You know what? I can email me and I'll get back to you on that, because I'll ask Ron Esslinger too what he thinks. Because if I had questions about pain, I'd ask Captain Ron.
What email should we contact you at?
NFNLP@AOL.com.
Okay.
Might take a couple of days. I'm going out of town for a couple of days.
No problem.
Got to go to Vegas. Tough. You know, it's weird, though. I don't drink. I don't gamble. So Vegas isn't that exciting for me.
But cheap.
Yeah. I'll just hang out for a couple of days. So. Great. Great question. But I'll get back to you with some stuff on pain.
Great.
Because there's an NLP book, and I'll look up the authors. That's what I was trying to think of, but I can't. It slipped off the top of my head. It was about health and healing, and they had a big thing on pain from an NLP standpoint. So I'll get that. Cool. Any other questions out there? All right, quiet group. Well, as we get ready to wrap up, I'd like to thank everybody. This was just an informational call. I really didn't even try to sell anything during the call, as because I think part of my job is taking my trainings and read my stuff and all that, is that I need to keep giving information out there, and it shouldn't always be a sales pitch. I'll sell stuff. Like last night, we sold a thing for the how to get radio interviews, because that's what that guy puts together. But everybody that's on this call knows my internet address, my email, and my website. So if they have any questions, feel free to give me a call, and we can answer that, and I can spin you in different directions. And just realize that building a practice, which is what this was about, becoming a successful hypnotist NLPer, we can look at it as a challenge or an opportunity. You're gonna live through a downtime in the economy, it looks like, and we can look at that as a time to grow and change. In the early 90s, when this happened, I had a practice going, and it actually did quite well. I changed what I was doing and did a few other things and went on the road. In fact, I did that in 2001. Things slowed down a little bit, and I went on the road and did some of the Stop Smoking weight loss seminars and learned a lot about group dynamics and some of the stuff. And those who see me train know I tested this stuff that we talk about in the real world. So you're going to have a unique opportunity to do that. So maybe in 10 or 15 years, some of you on this call will be having conference calls of your own about, you know, how to build your business and how to do this in the in the new economies that we're developing. So I'd like to thank everybody. And lastly, any last questions from anyone?
Actually, I have one, Will.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. This is Janice again from Vancouver. I had one of the things I'm sort of struggling with as I'm opening my practice is the idea of setting your rate. And it's
mm-hmm.
really hard to get a fix on what's an appropriate rate and how to go about figuring that out. There's always the advice that you hear and see about the tendency for people to undercharge as
right.
opposed to overcharge, and maybe you can give some pointers on that.
Oh, great question. Well, what I was taught, what kind of makes sense to me, is find out, just call around, I guess you could call around, but you can find out, like, what is the average psychologist, so psychotherapist in your area charge for a session? And,
yes.
you know, kind of use that as a barometer. I would charge pretty close to what they charge. But what I would recommend, what I always found quite lucrative and worked very well, is I put together packages. You know, it was like my last thing I charged would be $125 for an hour session, which was the going rate like in Fort Myers. But I put together a 6-session program with 3 follow-ups, once a week for 6 weeks, once a month for 3 months, so 9 sessions total for $777. Prepay, you'll be surprised because you're giving them a discount, right?
Okay.
And they'll put it on a credit card, they'll write you a check, you'll be surprised what they do. You know, and I had a short program, you know, 4 sessions for $377, right?
And did the short, this one work better than the big one, or what did you find?
It would depend what the person was going, what they were coming in for. One of the things you want to be open to, and it took me a while to learn this, and I had to relearn it again, is, if you're going to do weight loss, it doesn't make sense to people coming in that if you charge 4 sessions for $377, whether the person needs to lose 10 pounds or 100 pounds. So if people were drastically overweight, I would try to steer them into a longer program.
Yeah.
And they kind of know that because, you know, they didn't get that way overnight. But if you put together these little programs like that, 4 sessions for $377, a lot of people do that, and people it works quite well. And then I gave away some things, like, you know, I gave away CDs as part of my, you know, like relaxation CDs as part of my NLP and hypnosis practice. And then I had stuff for sale, but, you know, at least 2 out of the 3 times I'd give them stuff, and then I had stuff for sale and people would buy. And the other thing that you can do if you do that, like let's say they have, you know, 4 sessions for $377 and they're doing really well and they're on their 4th session, you might say, especially if you have the time and everything's going well, you might say, let me give you a free session. You're doing so well, I want you to come back in 2 weeks. That builds client loyalty and it keeps them in the system longer. And I started doing that, and the moment I give a, like say, I want you to come back on me because you're doing so well, I want to make sure this works. So set them an appointment in 2 weeks. It never failed that at least 50% of those people would refer somebody to me. So that's what I would suggest.
And did you find that they came back for all the sessions, or did they end up leaving some of it on the table?
The thing about programs, I know a lot of people don't like programs. If they prepay for them, they will show up, you know. Because that part, it took me a while to get that attitude of, look, it's like a health club. You've bought it. You know, if they bought 6 sessions and they say they want to quit after 3, I'd say, well, you know, let's put it in the burner, and when you're ready, you can come back and finish, you know, or I'll start you over later on. But, you know, I didn't.
You're not refunding.
No. It's like a health club. Try to get your money out of out of them.
Yeah, right. I have tried.
It's like, you know, and if they prepay, and honestly, there is some research that says, you know, if they prepay, they're much more vested in the outcome. And the other thing that it stops, by the way, as Russell Yarnell used to say, is every week they don't have to make a buying decision. you know, they've already paid for it. They don't have to think, oh, you know, Susie needs gym shoes this week, or, you know, I took a day off from work. Or so, you know, they've already prepaid. So it shows their seriousness of it. And then when you win, let's use the right language, when you get really busy, it's easy to actually sell it that way. Say, look, I only book prepaid appointments.
Well, you can start out like that. There's a lot of people who say you should just start out always insisting on prepay because it does set an expectation that...
Yeah, that they're serious and they're going to come.
It's the level of commitment, that's right.
Yeah, and the other thing that it stops is, let's say you've got, you know, eight clients scheduled, and they've prepaid. Two of them reschedule. That just happens. People reschedule. They get called, you know, they get overtime at work. Kids get sick.
Yeah.
Things like that. In the long run, it stabilizes your income. You know? So if they, like, the flu epidemic hits and everybody's calling off or calling to, reschedule their appointment, it's not like, you lost income.
Yes. Thanks very much for that. Appreciate it.
No problem. So I'd like to thank everybody for coming on and letting me do this.
You have time for one more quick question?
Sure.
How do you build the international speaking up?
Is this Michael again?
It sure is.
Okay. How I built it up. Every conference I could find for 5 or 6 years, and I would speak at these conferences. So actually, you know, if you speak, the conference is free, right? But you still got to pay your hotel room and your travel and that. But I was doing it to build and to network. You know, I would try to meet people. And obviously it worked. And what was funny, and I'll tell you, this is just how things seem to work. I was at a training, I won't say which conference, but I was all depressed because I'm like, I didn't make much, you know, I was doing a training, didn't have many people. Very few people bought while they were at the conference, so I was like, oh, well, another weekend down or whatever. And I was kind of depressed. Well, one person bought my program, bought some stuff from me, and 2 weeks later, I get a call from a guy in India. And what it was, she was going to India for something, and took my program with her, and they watched it, they liked it, they called me up and invited me, okay? And the first time I went, I didn't charge much. I made a little bit, had all my, expenses covered, but I got known, and I met more people. And at that first training in India where I didn't make much money, I met the person that had a bigger training company that brought me back to India like 8 times where I made more money. And same kind of thing happened in Asia and everywhere. So I networked at a lot of the conferences because you will meet people from different areas. And the other thing you got to do is write a book. So,
okay.
And kind of build it that way. So that would be my advice.
Great.
And the other thing, by going to all the conferences, it builds up your speaking. You know, it gives you the, you know, we talk about trainers training and becoming a speaker. Well, you have to practice. And there's nothing like conferences to practice.
Excellent.
So that would be my advice, kind sir.
Okay.
All right.
Excellent.
All right. No problem. Well, again, I'd like to thank everybody. If anybody has any questions, like I said, email me. Think about other topics you'd like to hear on the conference call so I can begin to plan them out. Like I said, I'd like to do at least one a month with general information and maybe one specialty one. So I want to carve those out for everybody to be building this up because I think we're going to see some radical changes in the next few months and years, so let's get prepared for it. So I'd like to thank everybody for sharing and coming on, and let me know what you thought. Just email us, and that's it. Have a great night.
Thanks, Will.
Great, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Good.